I hope that everybody has a Tanakh. If you don't have a Tanakh, I have a few extras still here. You will need a Tanakh.
You need a whole Tanakh.
A whole Tanakh. Mm-hmm. To all my shiurim, you will need a whole Tanakh. From time to time, we may end up staying in one place, but rarely. All right, a couple of housekeeping items. We will, Bezrat Hashem, continue the growth. That should be the goal. Okay, a couple of housekeeping items. Number one, I should wait a few minutes because I'm sure people are still coming. But in the first class, I sent around a page for people to fill in their name, phone number, and email address so we have a list of who's coming. Obviously, over the course of time, new faces join us, which is wonderful. So I'm going to send this around again. If your name and information is on here, great. And if not, I'd ask you to please add that, and we'll keep this floating until the end of the shiur so that we get everybody. That's number one. Number two, we have started to post the audio recording of these shiurim on the shul website. So if you ever miss a week and you want to catch up, the recording, just this little machine right here, is now being hooked up directly to the shul website. And you can sit in the comfort of your computer and listen to the shiur. Hopefully we'll have the source pages there too, and you can catch up. It's certainly not the same as being here, but nonetheless, at least as an option.
I tried that last night and it didn't work. So is it
which part of it didn't work?
Either one, either the written or the audio. So I'm not sure whether it's my computer. If you said it was loaded.
Other people told me that it does work. What you have to remember is that the file is 30 megabytes.
Okay.
So if it's loading and it says it's loading but it's just waiting, that's just because it's downloading 30 megabytes. So it may take 5 or 6 minutes till it's ready. It'll load it into temporary space. When you're done, eventually it'll get deleted, but it's there. Okay, that's number two. And by the way, we're doing the same thing for the Tuesday morning carpool shiur at Epstein. So if any of you want to join us there, we're doing, starting at the other end of Tanakh, we're doing Yehoshua. So, Machzik Chevelvish, straight started. All right. We are up to Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Bet. Ani Kohelet. Hayiti melech al Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I, Kohelet, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Natati et libi lidrosh v'latur b'chokhma al kol asher na'asa tachat ha'shamayim. I made it my focus to seek, to understand, to explore. Latur. What does the word latur mean? Excuse me? Doesn't mean to spy. That's the mistake that everybody makes in Pashat Shlach. Right? They call they translate the word Latur to Aretz as to spy. Latur doesn't mean to spy, it means to explore. The 12 people that Moshe sent to Eretz Yisrael on the mission of Latur et Haaretz were explorers, they were not spies. A whole Mahalach in Pashat Shlach, but that's for a different shir. But nonetheless, that's the word. Al kol asher na'asa tachat ha'shamayim, everything under the heavens. I made it my business. I wanted to understand the world. Hu inyan ra natan Elokim livne Adam la'anot bo. Evil matter which God has given man to. La'anot bo. To suffer him with. The biggest thing we suffer with is our curiosity and our desire to know too much. the yearn and the brand to know and to understand the world is a quality of human being that God has imbued, instilled within him, and forces him to suffer. Says Kohelet, Ra'iti et kol ha'ma'asim. I'm going to read a parak and a half, and then we're going to go back and reread and understand. But we have to look at a picture and a whole picture. So bear with me, we're kind of just going to fly through the text. If you don't, there's one more Tanakh up here if you don't have. And if you need for the future, then I would ask or suggest either to bring your own if you can, or help us build our library of resource Tanakhs for the shul. That's also a worthwhile effort. I'm sure that the library chairman will be happy to take donations for extra Tanakhs. Ra'iti et kol ha'ma'asim shenasu tachat ha'shemesh. I've seen all the deeds that have been done under the sun. V'neh hakol hevel ru'ut ruach, and all is vanity and ru'ut ruach. What does ru'ut ruach mean? What is ru'ut ruach? You're going to have this phrase in many places in Tanakh. Ru'ut ruach, ra'ayon ruach, all comes from the same root. I understand ruach. What is ru'ut ruach? You all know the answer to this question, you just don't know that you know the answer to this question. You have to think Rosh Hashanah. Trua. What is a trua? What is a trua? Comes from the word ra'ua. Broken. Comes from the word ra'ua, which means broken. Ra'ut ruach is a broken spirit. Hevel ure'ut ruach. We'll have ra'ayon ruach. They all mean the same thing. All come from the same root. Me'uvat lo yichal itkon. That which is crooked can't be straightened. That which is broken cannot be fixed. Ve'chesron lo yichal lihimanot. And lacking, imperfection, is impossible to avoid. Nothing in this world is perfect, right? That's what we're all taught. Nothing in this world is perfect. Me'uvat lo yichal litkon, ve'chesron lo yichal lihimanot. It's a phrase which Chazal apply in halachic contexts in many different places in Shas. In the context here in Kohelet, we're going to try to address the issue at the level of Pshat. Tibart anim libi lemor, in ani, hinei higdalti ve'osafti chochma al kol asher haya lefanai al Yerushalayim. Behold, I said to myself, behold, I have increased wisdom over all who have come before me in Yerushalayim. V'libi ra'a harbe chochma v'dat. And my heart has seen much wisdom and understanding. V'etna libi l'dat chochma v'dat holilot v'sichlut. I made it my business. I turned my attention, my heart, to understand wisdom. Which is an interesting phrase. L'dat chochma. Today, in modern Hebrew, we would say lehitchakem. Although lehitchakem has a double entendre, it's a double meaning. But ladat chokhma is to acquire wisdom. Etna libi ladat chokhma vedat holilut v'sichlut. I made it my business to understand wisdom and to understand holilut v'sichlut. What is holilut v'sichlut? So halalut is translated as madness. I don't like that translation, actually, because halalut here is actually a positive value. It's in contrast to the chokhmah, but it's a positive value. It's a value of mirth and merry, enjoyment. Sichlut, which is foolishness, the ksil in philosophical texts of Tanakh, Mishle and Iyov, the ksil is in contradistinction to the chacham. Chacham has wisdom, the ksil lacks wisdom, but that doesn't necessarily mean he lacks other things to replace the wisdom. In Mishle, the ksil is a fool and his foolishness is associated with evil. In Mishle, the ksil is equivalent to the rasha. In Kohelet, the ksil is not a rasha yet. The ksil is simply one who embraces a philosophy that's not a philosophy of wisdom, but rather a philosophy of holenut, of enjoyment. Yedati shegam zehu ra'ayon ruach. And my conclusion is that this too is a broken spirit. Ki berov chokhma rov ka'as yosif da'at yosif mach'ov. The more wisdom, the more anger. And the more knowledge, the greater the pain. Amarti ani b'libi l'chana anasecha b'simcha ure'e b'tov. So I said in my heart, let me try joy and let me see good. V'nei gam hu hava. This too is vanity. Yischok amarti meholal ulesimcha mazo osa. To joy, I said, to lischok, to laughter, I said, meholal. How do they translate meholal?
It is mad.
It is madness. Worthless. So often, the Mefarshim often play on the word meholal and mechulal. The hay and the chet, which can often be interchangeable. Ulesimcha, enjoy, pleasure. Mazo asa. What does it get you? What do you achieve from it? So far, the picture is not good. We do not have good news so far in Kohelet's quest. Tarti bilibilim shoch bayayin et b'sari. I turned my heart from the same word, latur. Turned my heart to wine, v'libi noheg b'chochma, and my heart engaged in wisdom, v'le'echoz b'sichlut, and to embrace foolishness, ad asher ere eize tov livnei adam asher ya'asu tachat ha'shamayim, till I could figure out which is best. In other words, what's his solution? Excuse me?
Better to think or to have fun,
so, well, the dilemma is he's got three dilemmas, right? In each one of the three arenas that Sefer Kohelet is defined by. Chochma,
wisdom,
deeds, building, creation, ma'asim, and enjoyment and pleasure. Right? Those are the three arenas of his life that we've talked about last week. And we saw now here, we're going to go back and reread these psukim and understand exactly what they're conveying. But his solution in Pasuk Gimel is a simple one. Namely, until he comes up with a clear winner in this picture, his simple solution is to embrace all of them. Pasuk Gimel is very clear. Tarti b'libi limshach b'yayin et b'sari. I'll drink a little wine and enjoy the pleasures of life. V'libi noheg b'chochma v'le'achoz b'sichlut. A little bit of wisdom and a little bit of foolishness. Ad asher ere eize tov livnei ha'adam asher ya'asu tachat ha'shamayim. Let's figure out which mahalach, which derech, which approach works best in this world. Mispar yimei chayehem, the short number of years we have. And if we're missing one of our three in this equation, he's got chachma and he's got enjoyment, which one am I missing? Building, so all I need to do is read the next two words, which are Higdalti ma'asai. And here we start. Ready? This is, you know, remember the roller coaster rides? You go up slowly, and then when you get to the top of the hill, shoo, you fly. So here, got to the top of the hill, top of the hill of the roller coaster, and here he starts to fly. Higdalti ma'asai. I built my deeds. Great deeds. Baniti li batim. I built houses. Natati li kramim. I planted vineyards. Asiti li ganotu fardesim. I made gardens and I planted orchards. Venatati bem etz koperi, and I planted every kind of fruit tree. Asiti li brachot maim, pools. Olympic sized swimming pools. Lashkot mehem yar tzameach etzim, and rivers so that I could irrigate all of my wonderful orchards and forests. Built a yar, built himself a forest. Kaniti avadim u'shvachot. I purchased slaves and maidservants.
B'nei bayit hayali. I had b'nei bayit. B'nei bayit doesn't mean house guests. B'nei bayit means servants. Gam mikne bakar vatzon arbe hayali. I had cattle and sheep and flock. Mikol shayu lefanai b'Yerushalayim. More than any predecessor in Yerushalayim. He doesn't just mean David. Doesn't just mean David. He means going back to time immemorial. Kanasti li gam kesef zahav uskulat melachim b'medinot. I gathered gold and silver and treasures of kings and kingdoms. Asiti li sharim v'sharot. I had choirs, men and women. Al tishal. V'tanugot b'nei adam. And every possible enjoyment of man. Shida v'shidot. Now, shida b'shidot is an interesting phrase. Don't bother with the translation, because whatever translation you have is wrong. Guarantee it, because there are about 42 different translations to shida b'shidot. I looked up this morning in the Dat Mikra, there's a footnote with about 18 different options. All the different mefarshim and mamarei chazal possible going all over the map. Everything from multitude of women to chests and cases to adornments for chariots to chariots themselves. Whatever it is, it's part of his wealth that he's amassed. The gadalti v'osafti mikol shaya lefanai b'Yerushalayim. I have amassed more than any predecessor before me in Yerushalayim. Av chochmati amdali. And through all of this, my wisdom held true. I'm still wise. The kol asher shalu einai lo atzalti mehem. And whatever pleasure my eyes saw, I embraced. I did not negate myself. Deny myself, thank you. Do not deny myself any pleasure. Lo manati et libi mikol simcha. Ki libi samech mikol amali. From all that I have toiled, my heart was joyful. Ze aya chalki b'kol amali. And this was what I was left with. This is my portion. Faniyati ani b'chol ma'asai shasu yadai uve'amal sh'amalti la'asot. So I turned and faced all of my deeds and all of my toil that I toiled to do. V'ine, and I assessed it all. V'ine hakol hevel ure'ut ruach ve'en yitron tachat ha'shamash. Behold, it is all futile and broken spirit and no advantage under the sun. Ufanit yani lirot chokma v'holelut v'sichlut. So at that point I turned and I turned to wisdom and folly and foolishness, to compare the two. Ki me'ah adam shiavo acharei ha-melech et asher kvar asuhu. For who is the one who will come after the king, after all that is done? V'reiti ani shiyesh yitron l'chochma min ha-sichlut. When I looked at wisdom against foolishness, I came to the conclusion that wisdom has an advantage over stupidity. I think we'd all agree. Kitron ha'or min ha'choshech, like the advantage of light over darkness. After all, ha'chacham enav b'rosho, v'yaksil b'choshech olech. The wise man walks with his eyes in his head. The fool walks in darkness. Go back to last week's shiur, we talked about the imagery of the sun and the metaphor of the sun with wisdom. V'yadati gamani, and then I understood Shemikre echad yikre et kulam, that the end result of both of them, all of them, is the same. What's the end result of all of them? They all die. Ve'amarti ani b'libi, and I said in my heart, Kimikre aksil gam ani yikreni. The end of the fool and the end of the wise man is exactly the same. In the grave, the skulls look identical. So why did I bother becoming so super wise? This too is futile. The Chacham will never be remembered together with a fool. In the days to come, everything's forgotten. The wisdom of the wise and the foolishness of the fool, they're all forgotten. The grave covers them both. How can the wise man die the same death as the fool? It doesn't. It's not fair. You know, Shlomo HaMelech would have simply said, it's not fair. We could have solved ourselves a lot of trouble by giving him the right answer, which is, what's the right answer to it's not fair? Life's not fair. Every one of us is a parent. Right? Life's not fair. The saneti et ha-chaim. I hated life. Ki ra alaya ma'aseh shnasach tachat ha-shamesh, ki akol hevel utruach. For all of the deeds done under the sun, all is futile and broken spirit. The saneti ani et kol ha-malish ani amel tachat ha-shamesh. And I hated and despised all of my toil that I toiled under the sun. Look at what he's built. Look at what he's created. Look at what he's amassed. And he hated it. Why? Shanichenu la'adam shi'achar. I have to leave it to somebody after me. Mi yodea hechacham yosachal. Who knows if the one after me is going to be wise, is going to be a fool? V'yishlat b'chol ha'malisha amalti b'shechachamti tachat ha'shamish. And he is going to rule over everything that I built in all my wisdom? This one who's going to come after me? Gam zahav. This too is futile. I turned to my heart in despair. All of the toil under the sun. A person can toil with wisdom and understanding and success. And at the end, everything has to be given over to somebody who didn't lift a pinky to build all of that. Gamza hevel vira araba. This is futile and this is great evil. What is going to be the man's, at the end of man, all his toil? All of his days are painful. The kasin yano full of anger. As he said at the beginning, gambalaila lo shechav libo. He can't sleep at night. Gam ze hevel hu. All of this is futile. Now, for purely arbitrary reasons that I haven't explained, I'm going to stop here for a minute. There's a reason why I stop here. I will show you and explain to you and defend the rationale to that momentarily. But let's go back to the beginning for a moment. One thing's certain. Kohelet is a very frustrated philosopher. Philosopher, builder, lover. He's very frustrated. All of his areas, all of his expertise, all of his success, all of it is a source of great pain. Yosif da'at, yosif machov. The more wisdom he has, the more pain and the more anger he has. And something which we need to explore and to try to understand what exactly is going on. But I want to first try to understand what the context of this text is. From a structural point of view, why did I stop here? Essentially, well, I'll come back to why I stopped here. Let's go back to the beginning for a moment and take a look at Pesukim Yud Bet, Pasuk Yud Bet through Pasuk Bet of Perek Bet. Essentially, Ani Kohelet Melech Aiti Melech HaYisrael B'Yushalayim, his introduction, I Kohelet, King of Israel and Yerushalayim, is a personal description of a personal quest that's based on a set of assumptions. What are the assumptions? He makes a statement. Looks at the world, looks at all of the different areas and arenas of his life, which are in fact three. We've said all along, what are the three arenas?
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Enjoyment. And
building.
Which in Tikkalit he calls either Amal or Amel or Maasim. And he makes an assertion about each one of them. And his assertion is each one is futile. Each one is a negative. His conclusion for each one is not a good conclusion. He starts off with a declaration, Ra'iti et kol ha-ma'asim. Then he talks about chokhma, v'tna libi ladat chokhma, and l'chana nascha besimcha. In each one of these arenas, he starts with the deeds, then he looks at chokhma, then he looks at hana'a, and then in each one he essentially draws this almost the same conclusion, namely that they are futile. Something's frustrating him. And then in Perek Bet Pasuk Gimel, he turns tarti bilibi limshoch v'yayin et b'sari v'libi noheg b'chochma v'lechoz b'sichlut ad asher erei ze tov livnei adam ashi yasu tachat ha-shamayim higdalti ma'asai. In that moment, he's done something unique. Up until now, he's looked at, in the introduction, he's addressed each arena by and of itself, assessed its value, come to a conclusion of a negative value, and then attempted what will be our first approach or our first solution, which is
to combine them all.
Try it all together. Ma'asim by themselves has a certain character flaw. We'll see what it is. Chokhmah by itself has a certain character flaw. We'll see what it is. Enjoyment, pleasure, hana'a, simcha has a certain flaw in it. And the solution, therefore, must lie along a combination of factors, put it all together. And in fact, these are precisely the three arenas that we have talked about all along. These are the three arenas that Shlomo HaMelech's life is built around. At the end of the shiur today, we're going to jump from Kohelet back into Sefer Melachim and explore each one of these three arenas in Shlomo's own life to see exactly why he's chosen specifically these subjects of study. But there is certainly a transition from his conclusion, his hanachot, his assumptions with which he begins. That's the beginning of the quest. That's the beginning of the book. His declaration about chokhmah, which is that it increases pain and anger. His declaration about ma'asim, about deeds, which is that it is imperfect. Mu'vat lo yichal itkon. His declaration about simcha, which is what does it gain you at the end of the day? L'simcha ma'zo asa. That's his assertion at the beginning. And what we need to figure out is, through the course of the book, is whether he changes those assumptions. Whether he's managed to conquer the challenge that he sets out for himself from the beginning. That's the quest. And so his attempted solution is to, in fact, explore all of them together. That will fail. And then he'll go back to the rest of the Sefer to explore each one by itself in more detail. What's missing? Excuse me? Yirat Hashem, what's missing is the Yirei Elokim. What's missing is our fourth personality, which what's missing is the key personality of Kohelet, namely the God-fearer, the Yirei Elokim. He will remain elusive until Perek Hei. We will not find him or encounter him until Perek Hei. A little bit of a bias in our discussion I give you now, but nonetheless, it's important to understand so we don't get too... anybody here ever read the Abarbanel? I've studied the Abarbanel. My father has a famous story about the guy who came to the Rav and said he became an apikoros. by reading the Abarbanel.
Question.
Because the Abarbanel starts with about 45 questions per parsha. And then he goes through all the answers. So he went to the Rav and he said, I read the Abarbanel every Friday night after shul, after dinner, I sit down, I read the Abarbanel. And I go through question after question after question, but I always fall asleep in the middle. By all the questions without the answers, I became an apikoros. So the danger in reading all the questions is that you have to get to the answer. And we're going to read four prakim of questions and challenges before we even hear the beginning of the answer that Kohelet will offer. So one has to resist the temptation to become an apikoros by reading chapters 1 through 4 before we get to chapter 5. Well, that's just a way of by way of caution in our study. But it's also interesting to note that we're not dealing with an objective analysis. In other words, Shlomo HaMelech is not not exploring each one of these arenas of life objectively because it's an intellectual exercise. He's sitting in the Beis Medrash and trying to figure out, okay, what is the value of wisdom, the value of deeds, and the value of building. Shlomo HaMelech is out there in the field getting his hands dirty. He's building. He's doing. This is a laboratory. This is exploration. The laboratory is life. He is obtaining wisdom. He is enjoying himself. He is building. And from his expertise in each arena, he's able to step back and critique each arena. You have to be an expert in a particular field before you can speak with some legitimacy on that field. If I were to stand up before you today and give you a lecture on the cutting edge technological advances in ultrasound technology, it wouldn't be very interesting for any of you, because what I know in that field is nothing. So how can I speak to a field I know nothing about? Shlomo HaMelech, by virtue of the fact that his life reflects a certain expertise or a certain extremism in each of these three arenas, in a sense earns the right to speak about each of these three arenas. Like a musician who can hear a orchestra and assess properly whether it's a good orchestra or a poor orchestra. I would listen to a symphony orchestra play Mozart and you know, be very impressed and walk away from it and say, thank you very much, it was very nice. Whereas a real musician would be able to tell you that bar was off and that musician was off by half a note over there. Whereas I wouldn't be able to do that because I don't have the ear trained for it. You have to be an expert in each of these fields to be able to legitimately address the strengths and the weaknesses of each of these fields. So it's very important for Kohelet from the beginning of the Sefer to prove to us that he's speaking from a position of knowledge, personal experience, and strength. When he talks about building and about creation and about achieving something, putting a mark on the world, it's because he's done it. He's been there in the trenches. And when he talks about philosophy, when he talks about pleasure, he's been there. He's done it. And we have to respect the expertise in each of these arenas. So let's see where our introduction takes us. Let's take a look at them one at a time. Starting with Pasuk Yud Dalet and Tetvav. Field of deeds. Ra'iti et kol ha'ma'asim. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Ra'iti et kol ha'ma'asim shenasu tachat ha'shamesh. I looked at all the deeds under the sun. V'nei kol hevel ru'ut ruach. All is futile and broken. Why? Mi'uvat lo yuchal litkon v'chesron lo yuchal lihimanot. Because the crooked cannot be straightened, and the lacking cannot be avoided. What's he saying? Specifically to the field of focus, which is amal, ma'asim, biniyah, building, constructing, doing, achieving. What's he suggesting? Why is there a frustration, and what is it, and how is it reflected by these words, pasuk tetvav, uvat lo yuchal yitkon v'chason lo yuchal yimanot? This is a give and take from here on in.
Nothing's perfect.
Elaborate. In what field specifically, and how is it that nothing's perfect? Right, we're not talking about philosophy, and we're not talking about enjoyment. We're talking specifically about ma'asim, meaning amal, toil, building, creation. So what's never perfect? Anything we create, anything we build, the tallest skyscraper in the world has its flaws. The world learned that the hard way in 2001. How many times have you tried to build something in your home, line something up with a wall, only to discover that a wall is not straight? Looks straight to me. No. Put a level up there, suddenly you realize your walls are all crooked in your house. No construction can ever be claimed to be perfect, because it's made by
man.
And we are not perfect beings. We are not angels. Baba Shemayim. We are not malachim. We are not robots. We are prone to human judgment and human error. And the reality is, from the guy who lays down the roads, to the builder of your home, to the builder of cities, to the architectural design of skyscrapers, to city planning, no matter what field of human endeavor you look at, every discipline of science, technology, construction, human effort, we are not perfect, we make mistakes. That's the world we live in. And so Shlomo, who seeks perfection, looks at the world of Ma'asim, and he's frustrated. He wants it to be right. And the reality is, no matter what he does, there's always some little level of imperfection.
When you say he seeks perfection, is it possible to look at it and say he seeks to be God?
That's a big jump. To suggest that Shlomo Melech is seeking to be God, that's a very big jump.
But what is perfection?
I don't think you're wrong, but that's a big jump. We're not there yet. Okay. I can't prove that yet, but we hopefully will. If not today, then by next week. We'll see where we're going to go with it, but I don't think you're too off the mark. For now, let's leave that issue for a moment. Now, what happens to a builder, to a contractor, who constantly is frustrated by the imperfections of his trade? Shlomo was a contractor at the end of the day. He was a builder. So what does a builder do when he's frustrated by the imperfections of his trade? Right. No, he changes profession, and he becomes... No. It gets even more frustrating. No. He becomes the architect. He says, forget this. I got to deal with kablanim. Anybody who's lived in Israel knows how to deal with kablanim. I got to deal with kablanim. Forget it. I'll go become the architect. Because in the world of architecture, on the plans, the world can be perfect. I can design a perfect plan. So the amal becomes the chacham. Take a step back. If the application is imperfect, then withdraw one step from the application and turn to the theoretical, the hypothetical, the intellectual, the arena where you truly can seek perfection. And therefore, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Hinei Ani Gdalti V'Yosafti Chochma Al Kol Asher Haya Lefanai in Yerushalayim V'Libida Ahar Bechochma Badat. If the world of Ma'asim was imperfect, Chisaron Lo Yochal Leimanot, then my only solution is to step back from the construction and embrace the architect, embrace the philosopher of the world, and try to create a perfect structure. And his conclusion, Shegam ze hu v'ayon ruach. His conclusion is that this too is
hevel.
Why? Ki berov chochma rov kaas v'yosif dat yosif machov. Because the more wisdom, the more anger, the more knowledge, the more pain.
Not a true scientist.
Not a true scientist? Maybe.
Because he's aiming for an
I'll
ideal.
I'll prove to you that he is a true scientist.
No, he's giving up.
That's true. Well, he's going to modify this in a moment, but I'll prove to you that he is a true scientist in a moment.
He's looking for a unified field theory, unified way to put the whole world in an ideal format.
Let's assume for the moment that he's the ideal scientist, and he comes up with a hypothesis that really, truly could design a perfect world, but now he has to test it. Who's going to test it? Who are you going to get to test it in your laboratory?
People.
You're going to get your technicians, right? Mm-hmm. Now, are your technicians philosophers?
No.
Are your technicians perfect?
No.
So what's going to happen to your perfect hypothesis?
Stays in the conceptual.
Right. You'll never get it translated into the reality of the world. Why not? Because at some point or another, you have to come down off the ivory tower and deal with real people. And then you become?
Worker.
Right. No, then you as the scientist become
frustrated,
right? Are most scientists frustrated because of the reality of dealing with little people along the way? So now I've proven to you. So now, Mickey, I've proven to you that he's a true scientist. Because that's exactly his frustration. He's the ultimate scientist. He's the ultimate philosopher. He's got the perfect plan. So he designed the perfect structure. And he gives it over to the next kablan that comes along the way. And knew what happens? The kablan messes it up. But it was perfect. How could you do that? How could you put the wall like this when I designed it like this? Because people are people. The world of the chacham, the world of the hypothetical, the world of theoretical is perfect if you don't have to deal with people. But never, he has to deal with real people. V'yosif dat, yosif machov. The greater his wisdom, the greater his pain and frustration and anger. Because nobody else is as perfect as he. And nobody else is as wise as he. And nobody else can do what he wants them to do. So he's frustrated. He's got all this wisdom. Wisest man that ever lived. That's what it says, right? Wisest man that ever lived. Everybody in the whole world comes to him to learn from his wisdom. And Nevach, he can't translate it into anything of lasting value, because it's got to do with real people.
But there are other kinds of wisdom and intellectual activity that aren't geared towards trying out ideas in a lab or building things.
That's true, partially. But at the end, every theoretical, philosophical structure of the world, remember that philosophy in ancient world is essentially the same, is another form of religion. It's essentially a way of looking at the world, a model for the world. And it has to encompass interpersonal relationships. It has to encompass the reality of evil in the world. It has to encompass the futility and of death. It's got to deal with all the real life issues. And the more he understands how futile that exercise is, the harder it becomes for him. And the more frustrated and angry he gets.
I was just going to say the conception set can be imperfect.
It can be. The conception itself can be imperfect.
Oh, right.
It can be, but we're dealing with Shlomo HaMelech, so clearly it's not. Right? I understand that there's a certain ego in this parak. You get the you get a sense from this parak that there's a certain ego mm-hmm. here, a little bit, a little bit. I'll show you that ego in a moment.
Yeah.
I'll show you the significance of that ego, what it means.
But you know, you used the example of music earlier, and I'm thinking the architects of music had something in mind. But if it wasn't for the perfection of musicians in many different cases, that the architect may have perceived it one way, but the presentation of that could be so perfect in the ears and eyes of someone else that it could be the reverse of what Kahalik is expressing when you use the idea of music.
It could be. Kahalik is frustrated because you can have 1,000 perfect concerts, but the one concert with the one musician gets the note wrong or the tempo wrong, and Shlomo Melech is ready to throw in the towel. Because mm-hmm. that's Shlomo. He's seeking that perfection. And it's frustrating to him because he keeps dealing with real people. So his conclusion is, right, what's his conclusion? Amarti ani b'libi l'chana nascha b'simcha. So let me try a third option. The third option is to stop being so serious and stop being so such a perfectionist and stop trying to change the world and stop trying to perfect the world and start
enjoying
the world. Just enjoy the ride for a change. Just enjoy the ride. And the Schab Simcha. His conclusion? Ula Simcha Mazo Osa. What do I gain from it? He doesn't even bother to explain his frustration here. He doesn't need to. The greatest joy can come from a nice bottle of vodka. Greatest joy in the world, or worse. But at some point or another, it wears off. Joy is by definition temporary, ephemeral, non-lasting, and that's not what Kahalit's going to find his ultimate purpose. Yes?
Maybe it's not correct, but it's also against the term of tshuva. If you say tshuva, can you find it called? If you relate to...
We're nowhere near tshuva. Tshuva assumes Elohim. He's not in the equation. Elohim is not in the equation yet. That's why I said at the beginning, we don't encounter the Yirei Elokim till Parak Hey. We've got four prakim with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're going to actually encounter the Ribbono Shel Olam very quickly in Parak Gimel, but for a different reason. But for now, the Yirei Elokim's perception is not on the table. So tshuva is not in the equation. It's not in his vocabulary. Yet. This is radical stuff. I don't deny that. I said to you last week and 2 weeks ago, that's the Medrash in Kohelet Rabbah that says that ultimately Kohelet, Chazal sought to excise Kohelet from Tanakh. The Gemara says because it is self-contradictory. The Medrash in Kohelet Rabbah says because it is full of apikorsot. Shedvarav kruvim ledivrei minut. Because I have all of this very dangerous philosophy here, and unless I come to a conclusion, that's the story of the Abarbanel. Right? If I leave this year, you're all stuck in this year, by the way, until we finish Kohelet. You understand that if you leave this year before we finish, you're in dangerous territory. That's more than frustrating. You're in serious danger. Yes, two more comments, and then I want to move on.
You propose the problem with the frustration with Hoffman is that, like the architect, he won't say built properly, which already suggests would be that he's combining two things, which comes later. And I'm wondering if the frustration isn't the same as with the mirth or joy, that it's fleeting. If you can think of something and it's so perfect, no one else can understand it. It doesn't persist, it doesn't go anywhere. But you don't even need to get to the state of trying to execute it in reality, have a simple.
That's also possible. That is also entirely possible.
Can you introduce something that was not listed, which is ego? And if it wasn't for ego, you could say Chokhmah would be okay. So that's why I don't see it there. I'm just trying to figure out if you want the right philosophical framework.
Where's the ego?
Leave the ego out of the discussion.
I can't leave the ego out of the discussion. It's hitting me in the face.
That's what's causing him a lot of problems. Right?
Okay.
The chokmah is a perfect concept.
We haven't addressed why he's... what the cause of his problem is, what the source of his problem is. Yeah, we really haven't. I mean, you tried to go there before with the notion that he's trying to be God. I'm going to go somewhere similar with a different twist, but I'm not there. I'm not ready for that yet. So we haven't really identified the real source of his problem. We're just looking at the symptoms. I would agree, we are looking at the symptoms. And looking at the symptoms, we get to the next pasuk, which is now his synthesis. Put it all together. Perek bet pasuk gimel. Tarti b'libi limshoch b'yayin episariva libi lehek b'chokhmah v'lochoz b'sichlut ad asher ere eize tov livnei adam ashiyasu tachat ha-shamayim mispar yimei chayim igdalti ma'asai. Put it all together. Wine and wisdom and building and doing and thinking and enjoying. Let's throw it on the table and see what comes up. We'll create a chant. And this is essentially the theme that carries through the rest of this perek, this combined solution. And you see in this perek bet, you see elements of all three. Pasuk Dalet, Igdalti Ma'asai, clearly the builder, the doer, the creator. He's building homes, he's planting vineyards, he's planting orchards, he's irrigating, he's got sheep and cattle and gold and silver. He's got every possible wealth you can imagine. That's the world of the Amal or the Ma'asim. And then, in Pasuk Tet, Gadalti v'asafti mikosha yalef anai b'yishalayim, af chochmati amdali. He's still holding on to the world of chochm. Kol asher shalu anai lo atzalti mehem, but nor did I deny myself any pleasure that my eye perceive. Lo menati libi mikol simcha. And that is essentially the solution that he comes up with for the rest of this perek. We're going to explore where that solution comes to a finality and a conclusion momentarily. But before we do that, I had suggested to you when we read this perek the first time that this whole combined solution comes to a conclusion in Pasuk Chof Dalet. So, I think it's more the literary style of the Sefer. I think he's starting with an assumption. The three assertions that he starts with, this is a starting point. This is the world of. And now I embark on my experiment. So I think actually the book, the Sefer begins, the experiment begins at Perek Bet. The piece in Perek Aleph, these three field arenas and their frustration is more the introduction of his starting assertions. I don't think those are his conclusions at the end of his life. I think that's the beginning from which he then embarks on his journey. And his journey, he's a complex personality. He's got everything all wrapped into one. So he's going to start with all three. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is simply to look at this whole Perek as an introduction. Each of the three arenas of his life, and they combine together, and he's frustrated, and he'll tell you why. And then he'll start in paragimel with each one individually. I could look at it either way. But take a look carefully at Perek Bet Pasukov Dalet. I want to show you something interesting, and why I stopped here. Why I felt that Pasukov Dalet is already not part or connected to the rest of this Perek. Pasuk of Dalet, he says as follows. Ein tov ba'adam sheyachal v'shata v'herat nachsho tov ba'amalo gam zo ra'iti ani ki miyad ha'elokim hi. There is nothing, there's a, you have to know the Hebrew, you have to know the syntax. Ein tov ba'adam sheyachal means ein tov ba'adam ela. There's nothing better for man to do other than to eat and drink and enjoy the world, and I have seen that this is a gift from God. Kimi yad elokim hi. Kimi yochal umi achush chutz mimeni. Who is going to eat and be able to appreciate that which you enjoy, except for me? The person who is good before God, God gave the characteristics of wisdom and joy. To the sinner before God, what's his lot? And the lot of the sinner is to be the builder and the toiler, to create and to amass all the wealth so that he can give it to the one who is good for before God. Now, who's speaking at this point in the parak? I'm not interested in answering. We will, Bezvat Hashem, in 2 weeks' time, hopefully. Assuming we finish everything for today and next week. But I am interested in knowing in why I stopped before Pasuk Chof Dalet and disconnected these two psukim from the rest of this parak. Number one, it's the first mention of God. Number one, I was actually going to address that issue as number two, but that's fine, doesn't matter. You'll see why in a moment. That there is no question this is the first mention of God. Up until now, he spent a parak and a half talking about all his frustrations in life, and the word Elohim was not in the equation. Something's shifted there. Number one. Number two, this is a little more subtle. Somebody mentioned this last week, and that is that there is a significant change in person, speech. Perek Bet essentially is written in which person? Perek Bet is essentially written in first person. And this passage, with the exception of one quiet reference, but it continues into Perek Gimel, is written in
third
person. You can't put third person into Perek Bet. You can't do it. Why not? Because Perek Bet is built around the Ani. The Ani with a capital Aleph. Look at, listen to this Perek again. I'm not even going to translate, but you can all identify a verb form of first person past tense. Right? What I did. Asiti. Baniti. You can all identify, you can hear when a verb is conjugated in first person past tense. Without translating, just listen. Higdalti ma'asai. Baniti li batim. Natati li kramim. Asiti li ganotu padasim. Natati bahem etz koperi. Asiti li brechot maim. Kaniti avadim ushvachot. Bnei bait haya li. גם בקר וצון הרבה היה לי, מכל שהיו לפניי בירושלים. כנסתי לי גם כסף וזהב. עשיתי לי שרים ושרות. גדלתי, הוספתי. אף חוכמתי ענדה לי. וכל אשר שאלו עיניי לא עצלתי מהם. לא מנעתי את ליבי. פניתי אני בכל מעשיי. פניתי אני לראות חוכמה. ראיתי אני שיש יתרון לחוכמה. אמרתי אני בליבי, כי מקרה הכסיל גם אני יקרני, ולמה חכמתי אני אז יותר? שניתי את החיים, כי רע עליי המעשה. שניתי אני את כל המלי. שאני חנו לאדם שיהיה אחריי. I hated all of my toil that I should have to leave it to the one who comes after me. By the way, who is he talking about? Without a name, conceptually, his son. It's an amazing thing to refer to your son as the one who comes after me. Why don't you say it? Why don't you say the word Ben? You know the word Ben doesn't appear in this parak? You know what appears in this parak? 93 usages of first person past tense. There's not a parallel to it in all of Tanakh. There's not a parallel in all of Tanakh. 93 applications of the first person. Even his own son is called Adam Sheya Acharai, the one who come after me. Want to talk about ego? Now you know why Shem Hashem is not in this parak? There's no room for the Ribbono Shel Olam when you use first person 93 times in one parak. You simply have made the space too narrow for the Ribbono Shel Olam to enter. In the mindset of Perek Bet, there is only me. I'll show you something very interesting. Shir HaShirim. Assuming we accept, we do, traditional interpretation of Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is all about God. God and the Jewish people, but it's all about God. Mishle is all about Musa to whom? Mishle is all about my son. Every parak in Mishle begins with a message to my son. I'll read you the opening psukh. Actually, I prepared it for a source page. I'll give it to you. And I'm going to read it as we go along. I forgot to hand these out at the beginning. My apologies. But just, you have here the opening chapters, opening verses of the first seven chapters. Just listen. Shema b'ni. This is Mishle. Shema b'ni, Musar Avicha. B'ni, imtikach amarai. B'ni, torati al tishkach. Banim, Musar Av v'hakshivu, ladat bina. B'ni, lechochmati akshiva. Bini, im arav tal erecha takata lazar kapecha. Bini, shmor amarai. Doesn't matter what I mean. Each parak begins with the application of the word, my son. He's talking to his son. Kohelet is all about
ani.
It's an amazing progression in the life of Shlomo HaMelech. According to Chazal, he wrote Shir HaShirim when he was young, he wrote Mishle in his middle age, and he wrote Kohelet before he died. The progression's frightening. He starts with the description of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He built the Beit HaMikdash, and he's describing the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he gets a little older and a little wiser, and he has some words of advice to give his son. And when he's old and lying on his deathbed, it's all about himself. You'd imagine the progression should go the other way around. This is not Reb Zusha's story that I told in Shabbos. I'll show you something else, by the way. He starts with 93 applications of the word ani. Right? How does Kohelet end? The very end of Kohelet. Tell you what I'm looking for specifically. That's what I'm looking for. Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Yud Bet. Is it Pasuk Yud Bet? Yes. V'yoter mehema b'ni, he's a hair. Asot Sfarim Arbe. At the end of Kohelet, he turns to a son. He's finally reached the point. And you introduce the end of Kohelet and the Yirei Elokim. He's finally prepared to talk to his son. There is, by the way, a tradition, Shitat Rashi, that the reverse, that he wrote Mishle after Kohelet. And that this is the transition into Mishle. Either way, in Kohelet, you see this ego that doesn't let the Ribbono Shel Olam enter into the picture, and that frustrates him specifically in the tchumim, in the arenas of each one of these three areas of life, because it's all about his success and his ability to impact the world. And you see the result in terms of the role of God and the absence of Shem Hashem and the role of first person, and all of this interconnects. I just want to sort of time ourselves the next 15 minutes. I'm going to come back to the question of, in the combined laboratory of Perek Bet, what frustrates him in each arena. Come back to it, probably towards the end of this year and next week. But first, I want to take a step back. I promised you we would explore the specific applications of these three areas in the life of Shlomo HaMelech. So I think it's important that we have a perspective, a historical perspective, on why these three areas specifically. Shlomo HaMelech is known for many things. most notable of them? I would have gone to building the Beit HaMikdash, but okay, you want to go to the Thousand Wives, you can go to the Thousand Wives. Most notable amongst them is the Thousand Wives. Second most notable amongst them, building the Beit HaMikdash. All right. Maybe the other way around, who knows, before Karlat, after Karlat, Vesach Nish. But there's a lot more to Shlomo Melech. The truth is he was known for something else. It's Chachma. Famous story, wisest of all men.
Had horses too.
Oh, he had horses too. So that's what, you really want to put it on the table. This is, we can get everything on there. We can go, but that's exactly the point. That when we start to explore the life of Shlomo, what we see is this. I'll give you a couple of examples. Take a look in Melachim Aleph, Perek Tet. This is why I warned you, you're going to need a Tanakh. Melachim Aleph Perek Tet. Tet, 9. Sure can.
If he's thinking about becoming God,
I haven't gone there yet.
But that's the ultimate view of somebody, but then he can never become.
Right. I actually don't think he wants to become God. I think that there's an element there that we'll come back to. I don't think he's seeking to become God. I think he's seeking something else. But what he's seeking is elusive to us right now. I really don't want to give you the punchline, so I'm going to hold that in my arsenal. If I do that, you're all going to go, and then won't come back. And we don't want you to do that. So.
You say
Perek Tet. Perek Tet. Remember that Shlomo Melech builds the Beit HaMikdash. You have to know a little bit of the, just in terms of chapter structure, what's taking place in Sefer Melachim. The construction of the Beit HaMikdash is Parakim Vav and Zayin. Perek Chet, and I've mentioned this in various contexts, Perek Chet is a perek that everybody should go home and read. I'm not going to read it here today because it's not relevant to our topic, but there, in my opinion, there is no more moving, inspiring, uplifting analysis of the role of prayer and the power of prayer than chapter 8 of Book of Kings. It's Shlomo HaMelech's dedications prayer of the Beit HaMikdash. It's, you know, the day they built, the day they inaugurated the Beit HaMikdash, they brought 1,000 sacrifices. That's what it says. Then Shlomo HaMelech stood up after 1,000 korbanot. You know what kind of a, you know, kind of a, you know what that looks like? I hate to even imagine. I don't have to turn anybody into a vegetarian. 1,000 korbanot, he stood up and he gave a speech. In the entire parak, there's not one word about sacrifices. It's a long parak. It's all about prayer. To help us put in perspective what the role of the Beit HaMikdash truly was. You can't really understand the Beit HaMikdash if you haven't read this parak. So, that's homework. Not for relevant to the Shir or Kohelet. Nonetheless, Perek Tet, you'll read it on your own. Perek Tet, God's response to the building of the Beit HaMikdash. We'll also leave for now. And then we turn to Pasuk Yud Dalet. Actually, let's start from Pasuk Yud. Vahim Mikzei 20 Shana. After the 20 years that it took Solomon to build the two houses, which two houses? The Beit HaMikdash and the Beit Yar HaLevanon, the great cedar palace, which Shlomo HaMelech built. It was essentially his palace. He built both structures together. He figured he was already going on a building campaign. He might as well build them both together because otherwise he'll never get the money again. It took him 7 years to build the Beit HaMikdash and 13 years to build his palace. Remember the ego issue we talked about? Mm-hmm. And he built the Beit HaMikdash first, but he doesn't inaugurate it. He doesn't open its doors till the palace is completed. Okay, so be it. 20 years. And who built all of this over the course of 20 years? Who did the construction? Who were his workers? Say it louder. No. No, they weren't foreigners and they weren't Lebanese. From Lebanon he got the materials. Who were his workers? Who were his builders? Every one of us. Unless, of course, you happen to come from Shevet Yehuda, in which case you were exempt. Did you know that? His workers were taxes, the mas. The word mas in Tanakh usually means a personal tax, meaning not income tax, but personal dedication of service to the king. The mas oved was a rotation of the workers. Every tribe represented, save Shevet Yehuda. It becomes known in Tanakh as Sevel Bet Yosef, the oppression of the house of Joseph. And it is the reason the kingdom ultimately split. Now, 20 years he builds Beit HaMikdash. So for 20 years they put up with this. Why? Why did the people put up with it? Because they're building a Beit HaMikdash. And a palace. Okay, but a palace they also want. After all, they haven't had a real palace for a real king. David HaMelech lived in a tent, after all. And after 20 years of building Beit Hashem, Ve'et Beit HaMelech, the temple, and the house of the king, Chiram Melech Tzor Nisat Shlomo Batzei Arazim U'Batzei V'Roshim U'V'Zahav L'Chol Chavtzo, the king of Tzor. We'll come back to the king of Tzor. Chiram, king of Tzor. Remember this guy. We'll come back to him. Believe me, we're going to come back to him. Chiram Melech Tzor sends Shlomo HaMelech all the wood and all of the gold he could possibly desire. Now, we've already built the Beit HaMikdash and we've built the temple. So what does he need wood and gold for? Because he ain't finished. Aziten HaMelech Shlomo L'Chiram Esrim Ir Be'eretz HaGalil. In exchange, Solomon gave Chiram, king of Tzor, 20 cities in the Galil. Fair exchange? Vayetze Chiram Mitzor Lirot HaTeharim. Chiram, I'm not interested in. Pasuk Yudalet. Vayishlach Chiram L'Melech 120 kikar zahav. Chiram sent the king 120 talents of silver, of gold. V'zed v'hamas asher he'ela HaMelech Shlomo. Now this is the tax that Shlomo imposed upon the people. A tax means service of building. Leave not et Beit Hashem in order to build the temple. Ve'et Beito and his palace. Ve'et Hamilo. Now the Milo is an interesting word. It's a structure connected somehow to the Beit HaMikdash. Not clear what it refers to. Leave it for now. Ve'et Chomat Yerushalayim. If you have a temple, you have to have a city, capital city. You have to have walls. Ve'et Chatzor, ve'et Megiddo, ve'et Gaza. Whoa, where did they come in? We're not finished. Paro Melech Mitzrayim, alav ayukodet Geza, ve'israfa be'eh, shevet haknani yoshev ba'ir harag. Then he has a war with Paro, because Paro comes and he conquers Geza. Pasuk Yudchet, ve'yiven Shlomo et Gaza. So Shlomo has to rebuild Geza. Ve'et Beit Choron Tachton, ve'et Ba'alat, ve'et Tadmor, ve'midbar Ba'aretz, ve'et kol arei ha'miskonot asher yu Shlomo, and then he has to have all of his cities of treasure houses. After all, he's got an army. He's got a huge army. He's got 1,000 wives. Can you imagine how many children he has? And he's got soldiers, and he's got chariots, and he's got horses, and he's got to feed all these people. Where do you put the food? You put them in storehouses. Storehouses are Arei Miskinot. When was the last time Jews built Arei Miskinot? In Mitzrayim. Ve'etarei Arechev. Then he had to have cities just Ve'etarei Parashim. He had to have cities for his chariots because he had so many horses. And he had to have cities for the chariot riders. Ve'et cheshek Shlomo shechashak livnot b'Yushalayim uvelevanon v'chol eretz memshalto. And whatever he desired, to build throughout his land, throughout the land of his kingdom. Kol ha'ama natar mine emoriya chiti ha'pizi ha'chivi v'ha'ibusi ha'shalom b'nei Yisrael heima. Who built all of this? Who said foreign workers before? Right, so he had lots of foreign workers, Chittites and Amorites and Perizzites and Chivites and Jebusites. B'nehem ha'shenotru achareim ba'arat sh'shalom yachlu b'nei Yisrael la'achlimam. All of the local inhabitants that they weren't able to get rid of in the days of Yehoshua. If you don't remember that story, come tomorrow morning to the carpool shir at Epstein, where we're learning Yehoshua. Ve'alem Shlomo lemas oved ad yom hazeh, and Shlomo made them tax them. And here it says, Ubnei Yisrael lo natan Shlomo eved ki him anshei milchama va'avadav v'sarav v'shalishav v'sarei rechbo v'farashav. Here it says that he doesn't tax the people. But the people are his soldiers, and his chariot riders, and his horsemen. So Israel of the soldiers got the foreign workers to do the building. Go read the parallel passage in Divrei Hayamim, and the rest of the story with Rechavam, and you see that it's not so simple. By the time the tax finished, by the time it all finished, he had the tax on Bnei Yisrael too. That's a subject for discussion at another time. Is he a builder?
We are there. He knows the construction business inside and out. And he knows the world of the Kablan, and he knows the world of the contractor. And when he talks about Baniti li Batim,
he didn't do the building, but he understands the world. That's only part of the picture. What about the world of the Nehenen and the Simcha? What about the world of the, let's call them,
I'm going to use a term that's really anachronistic. But I need a term. I have a philosopher, I have a builder, I need a term for the middle one. I'm going to use a term that's borrowed from Greek philosophy. It's out of time sequence. In Greek philosophy, we'd call it the hedonist. Because it fits the model, that's the term we're going to use. It's the simplest for a shared language. Where does Shlomo Melech fit that application? Ve'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nochriot. Shlomo loved foreign wives. Now, you and I all understand exactly why he married 1,000 women. Right? You understand why he married 1,000 women. Because wasn't as smart as he thought he was? That's not the reason. Why did he marry 1,000 wives? Right? Because that's what you did in the ancient world. You developed the political alliances with all the little kingdom states by marrying their daughters, the daughters of the kings. The first wife he marries, the first act, by the way, his first act as Melech, before he built the Beit HaMikdash. He's coronated. The very first thing he does as the newly appointed king of Israel is his first political marriage to his first and favorite wife. Namely? No. Bathsheba's David's wife.
Oh.
Right? Shlomo Melech's first marriage? Bat Paro, daughter of Pharaoh. To whom he builds a special palace in that 20-year complex, by the way. Bat Paro. Why does he do it? 1,000 wives, 1,000 political marriages. 300 wives, 700 pilegeshes, and he's got the world wrapped up in his fingertips. Literally, he every king in the world owes his allegiance to Shlomo Melech. He's built the strongest and greatest and biggest empire that the world has ever seen. But at the same time, when you look at it in the context of Kohelet, and Shlomo Melech is indicted for it, you know, there's a fascinating machloket in the Yerushalmi. It's actually a wild machloket. Rishami has a debate as to whether or not Shlomo, what's the reason, the motivation behind Shlomo's marriages. One opinion says he married 1,000 wives because he wanted to be mekarvan tachat kanfei hashchinah. He wanted to convert them all and bring them under the canopy of Torah and mitzvahs. And the other opinion says he did it l'shem znut, because he was a hedonist and because he was working off the laboratory of Simcha and Hanoh. And the truth is, between those two opinions, the truth lies in between. I have no doubt in my mind, in the pshat of the psukim, it is
absolutely clear to me that his conscious intent was to align all these political, create all these political alliances, convert all his wives, and bring them all under the rubric of a Jewish life. We'll talk about Gerus in that context a little bit later, if not here, then in our study of Rut. I have no doubt that that was his motivation, consciously. But the reality is that it was completely unjustified. The Navi felt it was unjustified. Tanakh felt it was unjustified. And ultimately, it destroyed Shlomo Melech, it destroyed his Malchus, and it destroyed everything he had built. But that's the Simcha. So when Shlomo says, Ula Simcha Mazo Asa, what does the Simcha get you at the end? He knows from what he speaks. And the world of Chochmah, the world of philosophy and wisdom, you know, that is certainly the world of Shlomo Melech. After all, Chacham Mikol Adam, he is the wisest of all human beings. He attains his wisdom in a fascinating story, which we will explore Bezrat Hashem next week, because it's our starting point for the answer to the question of what's motivating him. But he, from a very young age, attains this gift of wisdom that makes him literally the envy of the entire world. Chacham Mikol Adam, people come from all over the world to hear his great wisdom and insight. And we, of course, know the application of his great wisdom when the mothers come with the baby and he says to the mothers, well, we'll just put the baby in half and solve our problems. And we have the wisest of all human beings. And Shlomo Melech is possessed, or obsessed, I should say. He's obsessed with a frustration in every one of the arenas of his life. In the arena of Chachma, of Hana, of Ma'asim and Binyan, nothing works for him. He's the ultimate specialist in every arena. And every arena frustrates him. And now I'm going to ask one simple question. We're going to look at three psukim. Let's go back to Kohelet, and with this we will conclude. What's frustrating him? What's angering him? What lies at the core of Shlomo's failure? Of Kohelet's failure? He had everything going for him. He had Chachma, he had Osher, wisdom, power, wealth beyond imagination. He had every pleasure you can imagine. He had it all. Can you imagine what anybody in this world not being satisfied with this?
But he realized he was not the ultimate source.
Something specifically is irking him. Something very specific. You use the operative term. Use the operative term. It doesn't need a sentence.
Death.
Death. He's obsessed with death. Let's go back to each one of the prakim. Each one of these examples. Start with, let's talk, we'll do two, because Simcha Mazo Asav, as far as joy is concerned, he doesn't even need to get to death before he realizes that it's of no value.
Why you decide to start where you started and didn't start from the beginning?
Because I started at the beginning last week and the week before. But it's on the internet, we have it recorded if you want, you're welcome to.
I thought you started.
No. Pasuk Tet Vav. Let's start from Pasuk Yudalit. Chacham, Chochma. Chacham Einav Burosho. Chacham sees, his eyes in his head. Aksil B'choshech Olech. The fool walks in darkness. V'yadati Gam Ani Shemikre Echad Yikre Et Kulam. And I know that the end of both is the same. V'amart Eni B'libi Kimikre Aksil Gam Ani Yikreni. The end of the fool is the same as the end of the wise man. So why did I bother becoming wise if I'm going to die? If I can't conquer death, then what value is it? J.K. Rowling eat her heart out. She didn't get to the subject first. Kohelet beat her to it. Right over your heads. Okay. I said J.K. Rowling missed it because she didn't get to it first. Oh well. It's on tape. Next. Pasuk Yud Chet. Masim, ki ra'a alaya ma'aseh shenasa tachat ha'shemesh. Evil, the deeds, creation, the building. V'saneti ani et kol amali. I hated all that I had achieved. Why? She'anichenu la'adam she'ya acharai. That I should have to leave it to the one who comes after me. Who's the one that comes after him?
His son.
He can't. He's so obsessed with this issue of death and of conquering death and of avoiding death and of avoiding the implications, he's not even prepared to let his entire binyan go to his own son.
So is he seeking immortality?
That's a solution. Is that a solution to his problem? A solution? Possibly, if he could get it, it would be the solution. Unfortunately, immortality has not yet been achieved. But he's certainly seeking some way of avoiding the implication of death. And we will see Kohelet from this parak till the end of the Sefer is obsessed by the issue of death and its implications. It frustrates everything he's tried to achieve.
But immortality is futile because you watch your friends die. Then there are other people you don't know when you watch them grow old.
One of the most powerful books and films that I ever saw was called, now the name escapes me, Tuck Everlasting.
What?
Tuck Everlasting. One of the most powerful films ever made. It's a book. Right? It's a children's book, but the film is just, I saw the film, but the film is gripping over that issue, of exactly that issue. But he can't experiment with immortality, so he doesn't know that yet. But that's exactly what's frustrating.
I'm not following the logic of what's so bad if you're the builder. What's so bad about the idea is that you're building it, not that you're going to sit in it and enjoy it. Then if you're talking about using it, you're back to being the hedonist and you're sort of confusing your roles.
Well, this is one parak. This is one combined solution. He's looking for all three. Right? He's looking for all three. This parak is a combined solution. He's looking to achieve the mass. He's looking to enjoy it. To benefit from it,
to create
the perfect world and to enjoy it forever. He's seeking immortality.
Enjoy is what the basis is then, because otherwise he wouldn't care
enjoy,
about
enjoy, benefit, eat, absolutely. It's all combined into one. Here. Next parak is going to start dividing the personalities up. We're going to take each one apart. But for now, this is the combined solution that he's looking for. And the point of frustration lies when every one of his solutions hits the brick wall. And the brick wall is called death. From here to the end of the Sefer, one of the two major themes of Kohelet, we said last week, one of them is the issue of good and evil, and the definition of good and evil. And the second is how to conquer the implication, how to live life in the shadow of death. Where all of this stems from, ultimately, we have to explore, and that's our agenda for next week. So you'll have to come back. Bezrat Hashem, we will next week look at the origins of this quest.